Welcome to the Power of Lifting podcast. I'm Eric Cafferty, owner of the Mecca Gym. I am a strength and conditioning coach and a contest prep specialist. The focus of this podcast is to dive into the mindset and the drive of people who have done incredible things with their lives. Welcome to the Power of Lifting podcast. It's been a hot minute since we've been on the horn here.
Yeah. But then it seems like it was just yesterday at the same time.
It does. Time's a flying. We're getting into summer. I've been traveling. Everybody's been traveling. We got all kinds of events. We've still got this new gym that we're, you know, just ripping and roaring. And today we have a man who's partially responsible for our leap in the right direction, right. Mr. Blake Haggett. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Eric and Hunter, for having me on today. I'm very excited. I think we've talked about this since you started the podcast we've needed to do an episode together.
Yeah, we've definitely discussed. I think I was, did you do a podcast with me on?
You were like my third guest on my podcast.
Boom.
And we might have to like clip that in at some point because that was fun because didn't we do it at your house?
It's very possible.
Let's do it. Yeah, let's clip something in.
Yeah.
I'll find that.
I think so.
How long ago was that then?
Five years ago? 4 years ago?
Probably.
I mean, COVID's been two and a half years. You were like my third episode I ever did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a long time. So
you'll have to clip it and see the changes.
Yes, very, very interesting.
Eric was very quiet at that time. I think he's blossomed as a podcaster.
Blossomed. Better in front of the camera.
I've just gotten older, and it's kind of like, you know those old guys that you're just like, they don't have a filter. No. And kinda, it's like, I feel like I'm turning into that. Like, as time goes on, I really care less and less about how I filter what comes out.
Right.
I feel like with podcasts, I really enjoy the open format of it.
Right. I think having kind of a three-way too, it opens up more conversation.
Three can, in some cases, be better than two.
Mm-hmm.
We're not gonna,
well, in this one, it does.
In this instance, it certainly does. Yes, we're not immune to sexual innuendos in this podcast.
Oh,
that's for
okay.
Sure.
There we go.
Everything's open.
Yeah,
I'll just have to change the explicit or non-explicit tab on the little.
Yeah, that's Hunter's disclaimer. If there's any F bombs, he's just got to toggle a little switch, and we're good to go.
That's
good
it. So go. Not a lot of extra effort.
A lot of extra effort. But Blake, tell us who you are, what you're all about, and get us going here.
Yeah. So my name is Blake Haggett. I am the CEO and owner of KZB Real Estate, a commercial brokerage in Boise, Idaho, and I have been involved with fitness and athletics, I would say, my entire life since I was a little tyke. I was a big hockey player. Shout out to playing hockey with Eric when I was a little kid.
That's what's up.
Got into more weightlifting with Eric in my early 20s after college, through college actually, competed in a few bodybuilding shows.
Last one was what, 2015 Muscle Classic?
Let's not count it. Because it sounds like so long
Muscle
ago.
Classic.
I know.
That's 7 years, bro.
I know. I was looking at some dated pictures.
It's been eight since I've been on stage.
Do we still have your picture up on the wall?
We need to put mine on the wall because I don't think I have put mine on the
I don't think
wall
he
yet.
Ever got us one to get
I
on
never
the wall.
Got you one. I'll get so you one.
Let's get you one.
I got some good ones too. But grew up in Boise, Idaho. I find a lot of my experience and successes in my not only commercial real estate career, but family life and entrepreneurship journeys. I'll start with the base of fitness in a weird way, because I think I've found a lot of not only skills, but experience comes from the journey that you go on through not only being healthy, but like a fitness journey, whether it's training for a show or, you know, dedicating yourself to a goal. I think there's a lot learned, you know, like, yeah, you can dedicate to read 12 books a year, but that's not physically stimulating to an extent that fitness takes you through. Right. So it's interesting to me, but that's me, Blake Haggett. I'm sure you'll learn more about me throughout the podcast.
Yeah. There we go. I love the Arc'teryx hat, by the way.
I wore it just for you.
Did you?
Cause I need a haircut. And I was like, I should not show up without a hat on today.
Our listeners may or may not know. We've talked about before. I'm a huge, like, gear Nazi, like, gear nerd, you know? And I'm like,
well, we did a whole episode on winter gear.
We did. So. Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause I like, you know, outdoors enthusiast, we'll call it whatever. But anyway, great brand. Just wanted to point that out there.
There we go.
Love so it. back on topic here. So how do you feel like, you know, what's the big tie-in with translating, you know, where you were with, say, competitive sports, playing hockey, like you mentioned? I know that I had some big parallels moving from playing competitive sports to bodybuilding to, like, professional career. What do you feel like that connection is, and how has it impacted what you do now?
It's a loaded question, but I think it's a good start, because I think that there's a foundation built when you're an athlete, and there's something to be said for how does that carry into kind of a professional career. You know, for sure. Like, I would say a solid 98% of us don't ever make it to the big leagues, right? Even though we dream about it and write about it second through sixth grade. You know, like, sure. What are you going to be when you grow up?
Through ninth,
professional athlete.
Yeah, yeah,
the
exactly.
likelihood of that is so NBA slim.
Player.
Most boys.
I'm 6'3" and white.
Yeah.
I can do it.
Come on, I can do it.
There's
right?
Hunters right there.
Yeah, there it is.
So I think that starting with the foundation of an athletic background, transitioning into the reason why I found intrigue in, I guess, the fitness or bodybuilding industry was it was something that I could control. It was solely on me. You know, we always grew up playing, I always grew up playing team. Sports that were like team, yeah, sports. Team sports. And so it's like, you know, yeah, I scored 2 goals, but we still lost by one, you know? And right. So I got really ingrained in this team sport, you know, mentality, where the thing about bodybuilding that was fun for me was that it was kind of my own journey, and it was as hard
totally
as I wanted to work. And it was,
success or failure.
I think that that's what you and I have in common, Eric, is like we saw that coming from a team sport thing. And we're like, oh, you know, if I'm the best on this team, like I can actually do well in bodybuilding because it all falls on me.
Right.
Now we get into the part of bodybuilding that like a lot of it has to do with genetics, you know, and a few years in, I realized that, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to be the best at bodybuilding. But there's so many things that you learn from the process.
Same. No,
for sure. You learn about the process of like taking something that you don't know and like throwing yourself into it and then becoming so educated. And it's really cool to look back on like all of those benchmarks along the way from not only athletics, but into bodybuilding. And I know that you see that as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's why I think that you've excelled in your career from that standpoint is you can coach and mentor individuals. And I love to see the passion that you have for it, you know, because I think it ties into that passion too. Whereas I knew after a while, I was like, yeah, I don't want to be at 5% body fat all the time.
It's really not conducive to everyday life.
Not
that's
ideal,
for sure.
I'll tell you that.
Yeah, not ideal.
Not ideal.
But not yeah, ideal. No. So what do you feel like that really connection was for you? Like, coming into bodybuilding, how did you apply that to what you do now?
It all stems from a level of work ethic,
yeah,
I
like,
think.
Like the routine aspect
of
it.
Yeah, the routine aspect of it. I think a lot of individuals find fulfillment from having a dedicated routine when you can track something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the more analytical you are, it's like, okay, yeah, I wear a Whoop band because I like to know, track my sleep, you know, look at those metrics and make adjustments so I can better perform. You know, sometimes you can't feel like the results of performance unless you do it for a long period of time.
Right,
all these people get so caught up in like the instant gratification, and like to touch on that, that's one of the things that I truly learned from bodybuilding.
Yeah.
You can't go get a six pack in, you know, 6 weeks. I mean, you can, but it's probably extremely unhealthy.
Right.
But the longevity of, you know, sticking to a routine, sticking to a workout program, sticking to a meal plan is what I think taking away from, you know, fitness and bodybuilding and applying that to like an everyday career. Cause there was a tough point in my time where, okay, athletics was great, transitioned really well into being a bodybuilder for the 3 or 4 years I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then to go from like athlete, like physical, like bashing of yourself to grow to then
physical
like
demands
more of like, hey, you got to get good at a computer and you got to get smart.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, it was like a big transition where the routine aspect, when I was able to take that from athletics and fitness and apply that to like everyday life, it really helped me track how I'm doing in my career. And right. so that was kind of a big piece that transitioned kind of all the way from the start, from athletics to fitness to now what I'm doing every day.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about your routine. So how do you, you know, your job obviously doesn't really have anything to do with health and fitness. I mean, everything does to an extent, right? But,
true.
You know, selling commercial properties, being a commercial real estate agent, managing properties, things like that, doesn't necessarily, you know, require physicality or any level of fitness per se, right? but how would you say, you know, you incorporate fitness as a staple into your routine? And what does your daily routine look like with, you know, fitness included in it?
I like that because the framework, and I think I said this earlier, the framework of having fitness in your everyday life, you know, just from a simple standpoint. And I think something that I really want to work towards over the next few years, and I think you guys can participate it as dads as well, is like, what does our everyday mm-hmm. life look like? Because mm-hmm. I think there's so many dads out there that are like, oh, I don't have time to work out. I don't have time for my kids. No, I don't exactly. have time for work. It's like,
there's yeah, because there's a lot of people
it's
out
hard.
There that have
it's really
jobs
hard.
Like this that are like, you don't work at a gym, you know?
Right.
So I think, you know, somebody like you, you know, this information can be super valuable. Like, how does that impact your routine, you know?
You guys don't have an excuse because you work at one. So it's like, hey, I get off at 4 and I'm
We're
working
here.
Out from 4
we
to
literally
5:30.
Have to walk all the way through it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like the tease. It's like, huh? Yeah, do you want to try me out?
Yeah,
today?
We're in the back of the building.
We're in the back, so you walk all the way through, and they got people looking at you. Like, so are you gonna hop on or what?
So how do you make?
Yeah.
It happen?
So my routine changes a lot, and I think, and it comes back to recently, just you know, my wife and I have switched up our schedules. She mm-hmm. gets up earlier than me, goes and works out, and then I've had to plan: do I work out in the mornings? Do I work out in the afternoons? Mm-hmm. Reason why I try and work out every day, whether I want to go or not, is I just know scientifically and statistically that it's way healthier to go sweat for an hour than to not. So right. it all starts with the
it's
basis.
It's pretty simple at that point.
It is.
Yeah,
basic,
it is pretty
yeah.
simple. And it's, you know, and I know how dumb it sounds is to wear a heart rate monitor, but guess what? Now that I wear one, I realize like half the time I'm at the gym, I probably should have just been sitting at my computer because it's not doing me any benefit, you know? So it's been interesting to see that aspect of it. But from like a daily routine, I try every night before I go to bed, where is my hour of power, hour of whatever, mm-hmm. you know? Is it, you know, an hour on the driving range, hitting golf balls, sweating? You know, I've started to incorporate some fun things into my schedule recently. Mm-hmm. Like I like to go mountain biking. I know mm-hmm. you and I have that in common as well. But it all comes back to the planning aspect of mm-hmm. it. I couldn't go work out from, you know, let's say 7 to 8:30 in the morning unless I packed my gym bag and shower at the gym because mm-hmm. it's an efficiency thing at that point. It's yeah. like, it's an extra half hour to drive home, shower, and then head to work.
Right.
You know, so I think it all comes back to the planning aspect and the religion of, you know, set yourself up the night before is a big thing that I try and tell myself. Yeah, pack your bag. Sure. So when you wake up, you don't have to think. You know, get in your car, your gym bag, your towel, all your crap's in there with you. So how that's transitioned and given me success in my career is, you know, once again, it's looking at that those efficiencies. Right. You know, we all spend time with our kids and yeah. sometimes we're home sitting on our phone or TV. But guess what? You could take 5 minutes to pack your bag for the next day.
Well, I think that people can take, you know, can get some really good advice from you in this aspect because, you know, they can listen to me until I'm red in the face about like, oh, you need to get to the gym. Like they're like, yeah, dude, that's your job. Like that's you tell people to do that. Like
of course you'll make money off of it, Eric.
Yeah.
You're a, you know, you own a gym. You're a trainer. Like
that's
of course
you're supposed
gonna
to say
that. Right. Exactly. They think that like I'm like this complete gym bro, which I mean I'm not saying that I'm not a gym bro, but I think, you know, just the relatability factor, right? You see a lot of guys in your shoes that I mean, look how many guys played competitive sports in high school, right?
Right.
Maybe they were, you know, I call them the Uncle Ricos of the world. If you've ever seen Napoleon
Dynamite. That's
a phenomenal
great
way
used
to say
used
that.
To be able to great. Pink skin quarter mile, right?
Mountains.
And, you know, so these people, and it can be women as well, but, you know, say they, you know, played sports and they were good at sports in high school and then they went to college and just kind of fell out of it, or they, you know, maybe they kept working out in college and they started a career and realized that, you know, a lot of people think, I can't wait till I grow up and get a job and make my own money. And then they realize, like, oh, crap, I don't have any time anymore.
Right.
You know, or they're not used to that, like you said, efficiency, being efficient with their time. And, you know, especially, you know, people that, say, start businesses like you have and like I have, like, your time just goes out the window, right? And then add on top of that, you know, you've got young kids, you know, 3 in 1, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, and you've got a wife that, you know, you can't just ignore all the time, right? She True. Requires time, kids require time, your business requires a lot of time, and you have a job especially that's not a 9 to 5, you know?
People
a lot of times don't understand that, like, I know because it's in my house, obviously. My wife's an agent, a little bit different than what you do, obviously, but there's still some parallels in that you're always on the clock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we were doing this deal, I mean, I'm working all day, I'm seeing clients, I'm doing stuff. I'm not calling you until 7 o'clock at night, you know?
Right.
And I should mention that you are probably one of the best people at answering your phone.
Yes. I take that with pride because that's the one thing that bothers me. And it's like, try my hardest that if I don't answer, I will call you back within 24 hours. And that's like something that I will like try and take to the grave with me that I'm doing a really good job.
I mean, I certainly call people back within 24 hours, but the impressive thing about you is out of everybody in my phone that I could call, I think that you're probably one of the most reliable people that I know is going to like actually pick up a call.
So when you go to jail,
yeah,
this happens.
This right. guy.
This
right
is the
here.
One phone.
This is the one phone. Do you have my number memorized?
I should.
You should.
It's probably easy.
That's
it
true.
It is very easy. Yeah. It
I
is
know
easy.
You and Marshall are very similar in that fashion. Yeah. But no, it's. It's.
I think to speak on that for a second, I know when working with clients, obviously what you guys do is much different than I do. But one thing I do when I am working through a deal mm-hmm. with a client or a customer. You know, I am on call
for sure.
You know, and yeah, it's you see it in your household too. It's like you become on call for those people because, in our industry, like you said, 90% of my clients are working all day. So when we negotiate the deals, it's from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. or on the weekends,
right.
looking at spaces, things like that. Right. So it's just kind of interesting to see is, you know, yeah, the 9 to 5, and I feel like that just needs to completely go out the fucking window. Because nobody works a 9 to 5 anymore. No. There's so much stimulation and opportunity to work and learn off the clock. Like
for sure.
People listening to this podcast on the treadmill. It's
for
like
sure.
You're learning and you can consider that work because there's some potential benefit to your work life or your work life balance. It's
there's
I don't
so
know.
Many
there's
more
no
nice.
Way to turn it off unless you go to the hills without service.
Which
right?
is my favorite, but yes.
That's it.
Yeah. So kind of back to your schedule and routine. Like, so with all of these things that we've mentioned, you know, being a dad, running a business, having your own clients as well, you know, how do you make it work and how do you make fitness a priority?
So work life, I'm going to touch on this, work life balance is impossible to master, in my opinion. It's something that's always being adjusted and changed.
I can subscribe to that.
As long as you're aware of the things you need to get done and what you're trying to achieve, and you're making enough time and energy for those things, then mm-hmm. you're in a good work-life balance, in my opinion. You know, like, obviously the adjustment of having more kids, for me, it's been a little bit less work, but guess what? I'm prioritizing the certain things in work that have to get done, because family matters to me very equally too, you know? So from like a daily perspective, you know, the last 12 months, it's been very rigid of, I do my workout first thing in the morning because it gets me going, you know, train for 60 to 90 minutes, sweat, shower at the gym. For those of you that drive to the gym and then drive home to shower just to then go to work.
Right.
Shower at the gym, guys. It saves you 30 minutes, and that's
a
lot of time.
Well, when you got
when
nice showers,
up.
Like somebody, us.
towel service.
Towel service. There
towel
we go.
Service. But recently that's changed. My wife and I were talking about our schedules, and she said, hey, I really like doing this Orange Theory Fitness thing. It really helps me stay motivated. And her best time to go was from 6 to 7 in the morning. So that adjusted when I plan my stuff, and I'm still trying to get used to when I can best pencil in mm-hmm. my workouts, because I don't like working out at 4 or 5 p.m. in the afternoon, because then I can't sleep.
Yeah,
you know, and same. Sleep's so important for like
the most important.
It's the most important thing, you know. So training hard for an hour and a half a day and sleeping, I think, become one and two on the list. So right. I've had to actually rework how my schedule routine works. And, you know, if it's a workout at lunch or if I go when my wife gets home, it's kind of been hit or miss. So I don't have a perfect answer for you. And I hope you guys don't either listening to this, because it's always an adjustment. But there's something to be said for setting a routine and sticking mm-hmm. to it if you have yeah. that capability, because yeah. that's where you can track your results.
I think it's
you
know? Interesting sure. that routines maybe shouldn't be viewed as something that are rigid in the for aspect sure. of like long term. Like you have your short term rigidity or whatever, where you have this is what I'm going to do, but life change, kid comes along the way.
Bingo.
Shift stuff up. That has to be malleable, but it's still a routine.
Right.
Exactly.
Still in there.
Yeah, routine isn't like I work out at 6 a.m. every day. It's I work out every day.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. I talked to somebody about that the other day, and I think it was in regards to, like, people, you know, working and...
Somewhat of a pain in the butt. To,
okay.
You might be loosening it. I don't know.
Yeah. There you go.
There we go.
But anyway, I was talking to somebody in regards to, like, they were having some right. schedule changes with work, and it's like, you know, they basically, people get in a routine like, oh, I have to work out at this time or it's not a good workout, or like, you know, if people ask me like when I work out and things like that, like I kind of schedule it in, but things always come up. Maybe Hunter wants to meet with me, you know, during a time when I was planning on training.
The number one workout killer.
The number one.
I'm not mad about it.
He sees an opening and he's like, I'm totally on that
exactly.
one.
Take the blood.
Eric's exactly. like, shit, I should have penciled in my workout.
Yeah.
Oh, it's penciled. To be fair,
but,
it's penciled.
You know, what I told that person is they're like, oh, you know, I'm really struggling to like get workouts in now because, you know, it's like
this, and this,
and things come up and blah, blah, blah. And like, a lot of people really struggle if it's not their time to work out. Like, they can't, like, get in the zone
Work out. I will say I was in that because I was so set on my morning workouts. Yeah. And, like, I'd wake up feeling energized. I had my routine. And then when my wife and I switched some stuff, it took me off the rocker for a month and a half. And how I got back on was doing some fucking hard workouts.
Yep.
And
exactly.
getting the good feeling and that endorphin rush that you know,
exactly.
go for.
That addictive feeling.
Then I'm like, okay, I can find it again.
Yeah,
you know?
You got to. Yeah. And I think that's really valuable is, you know, set your routine, but also don't be one of those people that if your routine gets messed up, it totally derails you, you know? Mm. And that comes with practice. And that's not just with like finding workout times. That's with anything.
I agree.
When things come up, you've got to be good at adapting and overcoming those, you know, silly little things like schedule changes. You know, it's like totally one of those first world problem things like, oh, well,
right.
7 a.m. has come and gone. Guess I'm not working out today. It's like, well, no, if you have a certain amount of workouts to get done in a week or a certain workout that you want to do on a day, make it happen.
Right.
You know? Get it in, get it done. And especially this relates to nutrition as well.
Mm.
You know, people feel like if they go slightly off the beaten path with whatever their meal plan is, or if they eat something that's a little bit outside of their macronutrient goals for the day or whatever, they're like, oh, well, I had one Oreo. Screw it. I'm just gonna eat the
cheeseburger.
Whole bag.
Going to the Cheesecake Factory. I'll
yeah,
see you guys.
Exactly. And it's like, no, if you have little hiccups, little things come up, little things that aren't perfect, still put your best effort in.
Yes.
Because, you know, your best effort is still gonna be better than if you just scrapped it all together. You know?
Agree.
And I think that there's some coaches out there that really preach like, oh, you know, you need to listen to your body. And if you're not feeling it that day, then, you know, maybe it could be bad or negatively impact your progress or whatever. And it's like, well, to a degree, yes, you want to listen to your body if you're feeling injured or something like that. But if you're just like got a crappy night of sleep and you're feeling sorry for yourself about it, like, that doesn't mean that you don't go in there and try.
Right.
You just be cautious. Don't do something that's going to put you at greater risk for injury. Mm-hmm. Maybe do go and work out, but maybe change your exercise selection up right. a little bit to not put yourself at risk. Or, you know, maybe you don't push it, you know, 110%, and maybe you don't have the best workout, but something is better than nothing.
And do you know how you make up for that is for, like, 2 days ago when I was in here squatting exactly. and the weight just kept going up because it felt good.
Exactly.
So on the days you do feel good, maybe do a little extra.
Just exactly. throw another rep or two
exactly.
in there.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, you mentioned the trackers earlier. That's also, you know, super, super valuable, because something like, you know, a Whoop strap, even, you know, Apple Watches are getting better with sleep monitoring and overall, you know, health metrics monitoring. The Oura Ring we've talked about quite a bit, you know. That gives you a really good indicator if you wake up in the morning and, you know, you're like, oh, man, I'm so tired, I'm dragging, I, you know, I didn't get good sleep or whatever. Like, well, check the data. What does the mm-hmm. data say? Are you really, like, are your perceptions accurate, right? Mm-hmm. There was a time a couple days ago where I got up in the morning and I'm like, oh, man, I'm so tired. I'm just beat. And I looked at my Ring data and it's like, I actually slept pretty good. And, you know, they did give you a readiness score. My readiness score was actually pretty good. And so I'm like, oh, you need to quit being a wuss.
You know? It's almost like you wake up and it's not the tired from, it's the looking forward to the day that you're already tired of.
Yeah.
The anxiety of what's coming.
Right.
Maybe that's what it is.
Could
so
be.
You just got to shift your mindset a little bit.
That's so true. Mindset. It is a mindset thing. It's interesting too, because Eric and I are both very data nerds. And so I've caught myself a few times checking my sleep tracking data and going, it's an excuse to have a piss poor day because I didn't sleep great too.
Right.
So you know what I've gotten in the habit of is not checking it until I go for my exercise for the day,
mm-hmm.
because then that will allow me to understand how much energy to exude or like right. how hard I want to go after right. it today. Because sometimes I was catching myself going, oh, you know, 65% sleep score, whatever,
right.
like
right.
whatever it is. And then it gave me an excuse to have a piss poor day.
Exactly.
Whereas now I punch it in, and then, you know, every couple of like at the end of the week, I'll look mm-hmm. at it,
yeah,
you know, and evaluate from that standpoint. Cause you know what I'm talking about,
thing.
You know, you're like, oh, I slept like shit, I can have a shitty
yep.
day.
it's
an excuse.
I have started doing that actually as well. I won't check my sleep data until that night
yeah.
for the previous day
right.
to see how my day went. First, and so that I, you know, can't use it as an excuse. Basically.
Look at us. Look at us data nerds over here.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday's case in point is yesterday I got a really bad night of sleep Tuesday night because I was up really late, and I got up and I was like, I know for a fact that my score is going to be crap, because it always is if I stay up too late.
Sure.
And I had work stuff come up that I just, it's unavoidable, right?
Right, right.
But I had invited good old Cody here to do a leg workout on
Ooh.
Wednesday, and mama didn't raise no bitch.
Right.
And so I'm not going to be like, ah, you know, Cody, sorry, bro. Like, we're not doing legs today. Like, I, you know, I'm just kind of tired. No, I freaking strapped my big boy pants on and made Cody puke twice. It was great.
I mean, that was the aim of the whole
it was
morning.
Great.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And I was like, ah, no. So, I mean, point being, like, data's great, but, you know, being able to mentally push yourself through those little struggles that you may have, like,
mm-hmm.
I'm not feeling the best today, or, oh, you know, don't feel sorry for yourself. Just work to make improvements, you know, go to bed earlier than
I And I
night.
Think that that's what separates from being good to be great to being the best at
For
something
sure.
in any industry or field or athletics. It's when you have the ability to adapt and push yourself past. It's the hard stuff, you know, like
yeah.
the stupid saying of, you know, if it was easy, everybody'd do it,
right.
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. So how do you find yourself kind of overcoming complacency?
What's the alternative?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You either do it or you don't,
yeah.
you know, I know people tend to shy away from the black and white and the gray and the ors and the ands, but I think it's, you have to know yourself really well to be able to push yourself to a point of being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what bodybuilding does an extremely amazing job at, is getting uncomfortable mm-hmm. from a physical standpoint. And I like got a high from that because yeah. of, you know, being on the stair stepper with like little to no food in you.
Yeah.
You really, really don't want to do it.
Right. Really.
And if you do that,
that's a legit.
It's like, okay, I can do that. You know? So I think it helped me in my early 20s be able to like break those barriers of like mentally thinking you can't do something and you can, you know, and getting past those points. And then that just becomes like a benchmark of like, yeah. you know, I'm not going to be a little bitch the next time something like this comes up, you know?
So if you're complacent and don't want to do something, that's the thought that goes through your mind.
Yeah. It's like, well, what's the alternative? Like, it doesn't hurt to try things. And I will admit, I'm pretty stubborn to like getting set in my ways sometimes too, you know, of like certain meals or certain things. Mm-hmm. And I try to tend to evaluate things like, hey, let's try something new, or like, mm-hmm. let's order a new meal at a different restaurant. Like,
right,
just
right.
like little things to be open to, you know, that's where opportunity comes from, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
what are the top three things that you are passionate about and obsessed with today? And how does that compare to the past?
Today versus the past. Few things I'm obsessed with. I'm really into investing
okay.
on all aspects of the spectrum. Cryptocurrencies are fun. Commercial real estate, obviously, I'm like really passionate about that because I feel like I have a decent understanding of it. I'm still young, and I love the term in commercial real estate. The first third of your career, you're learning. Mm-hmm. The second third, you're earning. And then the third, last part, you're returning. Mm-hmm. So returning the knowledge, the wealth, the understanding of it. So I kind of nerd out on commercial real estate because it's one of those things similar to like the data we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. It's just a big numbers game. Mm-hmm. And there's so many ways to solve a problem and crack a code, right. whether it's changing this number or that number, or negotiating this piece or that number. And that kind of ties into the deal that we did here. Mm-hmm. It's really cool to see how it all kind of came together with so many, I wouldn't say hurdles, but just ups and downs that we had to navigate through, and COVID and all of that crap. So
yeah, wonderful,
wild ride.
Wonderful
from what I hear.
It was a wild ride.
Yeah, it was nuts. And at some point, you know, maybe we should go through some ins and outs of that transaction.
Yes,
for your
we definitely can.
People could learn a fair shake from that.
Mm-hmm.
You could go back on and not be as shy.
Listen,
I like that. I'm actually relaunching the podcast here soon. It's coming.
There we go.
There we go. You heard it here first.
You heard it here first.
So let's talk about this investing thing. So, do you see, you know, more opportunity with the market and cryptocurrencies and things like that through times like this, where we've had some pretty big extremes in both directions?
So I would say, and I always result back to a lot of what Warren Buffett has stated. You know, be greedy when others are fearful, and be fearful when others are greedy, you know? And, we're young sitting at this table to an extent, you know, when you look at like 50-year, 100-year data, I think recessions are healthy. I think market corrections are healthy.
For sure.
I think, investing is a long-term patience play.
Sure.
I always result back to my commercial real estate education that when you're first taught investment analysis in commercial real estate, you look at everything on a 10-year play.
Mm-hmm.
So what did I buy this building for? What were my incomes coming off of it for 10 years? And then what was our exit number?
Mm-hmm.
So you punch this all into a formula and a spreadsheet, and it spits out as if it's a good deal or not, basically. Mm-hmm. You have your set return rate that you're shooting for. But when it comes to investing in stocks and cryptocurrencies, things like that, what I take away from what I know in commercial real estate is this 10-year thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first got involved in some of the cryptocurrency and stock market space, I just had this underlying, okay, what is it going to do for me in 10 years? You know, mm-hmm. if I'm going to buy Apple stock at $100 today, and it's going to pay me a 2%, 3%, or 4% dividend for 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to estimate the stock price is growing at the same rate it's grown the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty good data, you'd think. Right. You put in that number and, oh man, I should really buy some of that, because if it's returning me 20% a year for 10 years, that's a good deal, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I think when it comes to investing, the reason, once again, why I nerd out and I'm obsessed with it is because it's a way to generate wealth. And I know a lot of people get turned off by money and people wanting to make money, but money is extremely crucial to our livelihood and our lives.
You could say that.
And you can't do much without it.
Right.
And I like making lots of money because it provides experience for me, my family, my friends.
Right.
You know,
sure.
You can do things if you have money, and I think money exposes individuals as well, mm-hmm. turns mm-hmm. you into a douchebag or a really nice guy.
Right. Yeah.
So I think, you know, not to go too deep into the investing thing, but it ties into a lot of what I kind of live for and the passions I have day to day is how can I make money for experiences? You know, we all like vacation and things like that.
What would be your advice to those people like that want to, but have no experience with it? Because it could be scary in the aspect of like, I want to make a lot of money. I don't have anything right now, but I know I should start somewhere. What do you do?
You just got to start. Like we were saying earlier, you got to try and mm-hmm. you've got to take an initiative to educate yourself. I think from a very simple point of, I mean, we all have watched YouTube videos. I mean, mm-hmm. you could go search anything like how to get started in investing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's probably millions of videos on that stuff. But from my advice, I think it's really important to open a brokerage account so you can start investing in stocks and index funds from a simplicity standpoint. And then I truly believe in the long-term value of what cryptocurrencies can do to the financial industry. So using the term of dollar cost averaging, buying a little bit every week, you know, maybe replace mm-hmm. that $5 Starbucks you get on Tuesday mornings with $5 of a stock or something.
Yeah.
And I just think you can't be in it for the quick buck because it never works out. Yeah, you can make some quick money here and there, but a lot of that is luck.
A lot of time.
And it takes time because, you know, it's like a handful of people we know in the Valley, like, yeah, they have these growing businesses and influence, and then all of a sudden, like, one video that they post on social media gets millions of views, and they're immediately famous.
Right.
You know, yet they've been this, like, business wizard for 10 years, and finally,
right.
you know, they get the right platform. So when it comes to starting to invest, I think it's something that you just have to – I think everyone needs a better education in it at a younger age,
mm-hmm.
And it's something that I'm trying to do through my personal brand platform is just to help people get exposure – without giving like super critical advice, like, hey, go buy Apple stock or go buy this.
Oh.
I love buying and investing things that you use and do. Peloton, Apple, you know, I invest a lot of money in Apple because I buy all their products every year.
Yeah.
So like I'm their number one customer. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I bought a Peloton, love it, it's great.
Stocks
bought
in the
a bunch
shitter.
Of Peloton stock, lost so much money on Peloton stock.
So
damn
Peloton
it.
Stock, in reality, like what is the long-term value of that? Because if it's a product that isn't going to evolve, you know,
right.
I mean, yeah, a user base is valuable to an extent, but it's like when you can't evolve a product like an exercise bike, like you can't make a Gen 2 that's like 10 times
I
better
think
than a Gen
problem,
1.
That's fair.
The problem with Peloton stock was the pandemic. Because if not for the pandemic, I think it would have been a much more boring, normal stock.
Long term, just 2-5%
yep.
a year.
But instead, you know, we saw ridiculous percentage increases because people
That's
thought this
point.
Workout at home thing was going to be a thing.
Right.
And people, you know, kind of grew accustomed, like they kind of realized what I was kind of saying through the whole thing. Like, no, gyms have a place because gyms are a community, and you want to
culture.
Go a place where there's other people because there's that culture. But also, I've worked out at home. I've worked out at my business since I can remember, right?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gone to another gym in years and years and years, and I know the struggles that people are going to run into when they start trying to work out at home.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It's a lot more difficult than people thought it would be because people weren't used to working out at home and crossing that hurdle. Like I've trained myself to be able to work out anywhere at any time. I can just flip a switch and it's workout time.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen overnight and people don't necessarily like it. So when they start trying to work out at home and seeing like realizing like, oh, when I work out at home, I just get, you know, caught up and doing stuff for the kids, or I start cleaning my garage
doing
or
laundry
house or doing
in between
laundry
sets.
In between sets, like stuff like that.
And the other set doesn't happen.
Yep.
Exactly. And before you know it, you've rested for 10 minutes and you're having a crappy workout and this doesn't work. So that Peloton stock skyrocketed because everybody's like, wow, we're going to be working out at home now.
Forever.
Gyms are dead.
Yep.
You know, the workout, you know. You
and then everybody
the
had a Peloton bike.
And the
right.
mirror.
And then their sales crashed.
Exactly. Everybody bought. And guess what? That was me. But I also got into cycling at the same time. And I'm like, you know what? This is a really easy way for me to get a pretty good quality spin bike at home. And it's pretty brainless. Like, it's still something that I use once or twice a week to supplement what, because
right.
it's a time thing.
It's a time thing.
Because I can literally walk into the other room, get 30 minutes in, and then it's done for the day. Whereas if I want a mountain bike, I have a 20 to 30 minute drive somewhere, a 20 to 30 minute drive home. So I'm 40 to 60 minutes out right there.
Right.
Plus, if I'm going to ride,
set up time, put the shoes on,
got to lube the chain, got to fill the tires, got to do that. So you're basically factoring at least an hour to an hour and a half for miscellaneous crap to go ride your bike. Whereas with Peloton, it's like 5 minutes of miscellaneous crap.
Mm-hmm.
You fill your water bottle, you put your shoes on, maybe you got to change clothes, you're on the bike. It's 5 minutes. Cycling, you know, mountain biking, cycling outside, you got to make sure all these things are ready, you got to make sure you've got water, you got to blah blah blah, right? So it's a convenience thing. But you know, yeah, it was really funny how everybody thought like, oh yeah, working out at home is going to be a thing. There's the mirror, there's the Tonal, there's all this crap
right.
that you work out with at home. And the equipment sales were crazy. People buying equipment to use at home.
Oh,
and
I know.
Now,
right?
What we were saying all along is now you look and it's like there's shit for sale.
Oh, left and
surplus.
Right. Everyone's selling
left yep. and right.
Everybody, hey, you want my garage gym set up? Anybody?
Yeah,
anybody?
Exactly.
Just take it.
Because now I want this out of my garage. I need room for
Park
other
my
things.
Car and toys. I,
exactly.
Right?
So, yeah, I think that stock in particular was kind of a funky one.
Yeah, we're in an interesting time. I mean, with, I don't know. Every market cycle is much different in what causes it, what starts it. And, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, but I think that we're headed towards, you know, some just correction. I mean, I don't see this looming depression or recession. I mean, those terms can be intermixed. And, you know, recessions and depressions usually only last for 11 to 18 months looking at the historical data. So that's, you know, if we're 5-6 months already into one, I mean, looking at inflation, you can consider that. I mean, at the end of the year, we could be, you know, have a nice soft landing and we're taking off again.
So I
recommend you getting involved in investing from a young age. You know,
for
once you're turning 18, you have the ability to open your own brokerage account and dabbling. I know you and I have talked about that. And finally, I said, Eric, damn it.
Dibble dabble.
Dibble
Blake,
dabble.
Blake did talk me into buying Bitcoin, I will say.
Yes.
He did. He talked me into it. It's still holding strong.
Oh, good.
We're still holding strong.
It's kind of in the shitter right now. So
yeah, we're still holding strong. I don't know if I'm still up. I've kind of quit checking my accounts. I just keep putting some money in there periodically.
That's the way you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, I don't even look at, you know, what it's doing necessarily because it's not money that I plan on
don't
touching.
Look. Right now,
no,
just don't look.
I
just
did
don't
look last week and it was frighteningly bad, but
that's,
that's all right. I like it's everything that I put in there, I don't even plan on touching for years and years and years. Probably everything I put in there, let's just give it a minimum of like 40 years.
Yeah, perfect.
40 years from now, I'll touch that. You know?
And that goes to speak for when you get into investing, whether it's real estate or anything, you have to understand your time horizons too. You know,
for sure.
It's like there's a certain percentage of money that I allocate towards stuff that I'm like, all right, we're going to see what this does in 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, the risk factor's through the roof,
right.
but, you know, I'm aware of that. You
right.
know, because I've done the research and I've looked into
well, you're
it.
Prepared
and I,
for it.
Yeah, you're prepared for it.
Educated
you know,
gambling.
Educated
yes,
gambling.
Educated gambling. I like that. That's a great way to put it.
It's not
but
roulette.
That's one thing that I'm super
roulette, no.
obsessed with right now. I would say in the last 3 weeks, I've gotten super obsessed with golf, which can be a bad thing because it takes a lot of fucking time.
It does.
But that's one thing that I've been super self-aware about in my career too, is I get hooked on these hobbies. Mm-hmm. Main reason why I've never gone hunting is because I feel like I'll get hooked.
Definitely.
Like, I'm just very afraid of that. And so I tend to get, I go head first into stuff when I get addicted to it. And so I'm very cautious with what floats well with family life,
right,
and what I like truly like to do, like being an athlete. I like to compete in golf, mm-hmm, basketball, little things like that. So yeah. I think all in all, obsessions are good. Just be wary of how much time you're allocating to all that stuff. Yeah.
So speaking of that, what are some 2 to 5 year goals and long-term goals that you have?
Well, I've got a third kiddo on the way. I've got a little boy.
Boom.
So I'm
team boy coming in.
Started my training yesterday to be the boy dad that he doesn't beat me at anything for at least 30 years or
at
something
least.
Like that, yeah. You know? So training
same.
For that started last week, but
good.
Goals 2 to 5 years. I've made decent money in my career so far, so I think continuing on like a good growth trajectory. I really love commercial real estate because I'm able to involve myself in a business and get to know it. The entrepreneur in me, like even working with you, like we got down and dirty with the number saying, okay, well, this makes sense. And how many memberships do we need? Like, I actually got to be a part of your business through the transaction. And that's one of the things I love about what I do in commercial real estate, is I like to take the time to really get to know that, because, you know, now every commercial real estate transaction you'll do the rest of your life, you're a lifetime client, you know,
right.
And I'm starting to see this repeat customer. In residential, they say someone buys a new house every 5 years. Well, commercial is much different. You sign 2-year deals, you sign 5-year deals, you sign 10-year deals. And if you do a really good job with that, I think it goes tenfold. But goals for me, I want to stay on a really healthy fitness trajectory. I don't know if I'll ever step on stage again. You know, maybe I'll get the itch one of these days.
Never say never.
Never say never.
But I think one of my goals is to always fit into my suits I have right now, because I got a large collection of suits I like to wear to
That's
work.
A great
and
goal.
So Eric and I always work on retaining muscle mass, but still being able to fit into my suit. So
yep.
He's, it's all about nope. the suits.
He's like, now he can't do this extra set. I'm not going to fit in my suit. And I'm like, you owe me one suit tear.
One suit. We need at least
we'll get
one
of them
tear.
One of these days.
One suit tear.
The legs are getting a little tight because the quads have been growing.
There we go.
That's good. All wrong
the squats.
With that.
All the squats.
But I think, you know, raising 2 daughters the next 5 years is going to be really important. I think you imprint on your kids the most in the first 4 or 5 years of their lives. So really being present in that sense. I've got certain goals for our commercial real estate company. Lots of transition due to family ties and things like that in the future that I think I'll be able to reevaluate a lot of my financial and career goals at that time as I'm working through some of that stuff. But just really excited to keep being out and being a resource to others. You know, I'd like to grow my personal brand to be a sounding board, and I struggle with all the time the fact of, like, to be a very strong personal brand, you kind of got to piss some people off. I have a hard time tapping into that because I like to be neutral enough and transparent enough that I'll tell you my story and hopefully you can take away from that, versus sure. You have to do something one way. That's the only way it works, which, you know, works for some, but just knowing myself, I can't push myself down that rabbit hole. I mean, I've got a bucket of content that I've shot that I rewatch and I'm like, I really need to post this. And I'm like, that's just not me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like cussing or whatever that just like doesn't feel like me. So I've always held it back because it doesn't, it's not real
and
authentic.
Yeah, it kind of comes down to that, like people being polarizing, you know, whether that be in social media or marketing or whatever, you know. People always talk about, like, you have to be polarizing and very, like, it's my way or the highway type of thing, and very, like, steadfast in one direction, I think.
But if you get statistical, like, with what you know from, like, a fitness standpoint, Eric, mm-hmm. like, you can be very factual when it comes to science.
Right.
And you can be very strong-willed in that and feel comfortable doing that. When I talk about some commercial real estate stuff, we can be pretty damn factual with that stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, when it comes to, like, people taking other risks in their lives,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'll give you the facts I know, but
yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you do kind of want that backbone of data always, right?
Right.
Because then you feel like you're giving, you know, not just opinion to people, right?
It's confidence inspiring.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I usually do like to, like, relating to fitness. You know, if I am giving somebody an opinion-based advice compared to like a data-driven piece of advice, I definitely like to say, hey, you know, this is what the data says, but my opinion of it is this.
Right.
Because we have talked about that a lot on this podcast, is that, you know, opinions and theories are always going to come before the data-driven facts.
True.
In the timeline of things, right?
Right.
They shouldn't necessarily come before that in the practice of whatever you're doing. But chronologically speaking, something is an idea or an opinion before it becomes, like, it, or else you wouldn't have things to do research on, right?
Right.
Like, you have to have an opinion before you test your opinion. It's a hypothesis, right? So you have to hypothesize XYZ before you test it. So I think, you know, some people can really get ahead or become popular by, you know, releasing these hypotheses or opinions.
Well, it's like testing. You look at, like, technology, like, they're really into the AI, mm-hmm. data-driven, right. self-driving car crap. It's like, you've got to try it.
Yeah.
Because guess what? It might work.
Right. Yeah. It might work. That's right.
Crazy.
Crazy, crazy world we live in today. So, I mean, speaking on that, I think it's kind of funny because I think that Hunter and I, maybe Walker might, but I doubt our kids will learn how to drive. It's one of those things. I think that my kids, 3 and 1, will never learn how to drive a car. Cars will drive themselves in 10 to 12 years, I think.
I'm going to make damn sure both my kids know how to drive.
Well, I've got daughters, so I don't want them driving anyway.
That's true. That's fair.
I want my daughter driving and kicking some ass is what I want.
Yeah.
You got to be careful.
Camaro 64.
Got to be careful.
Yeah. So,
I just never want manuals to go away, but that's just like my 65-year-old self, because I'm 65 in a 26-year-old body. That's
right.
What I am.
Right.
Yeah. I know a few of those guys.
Yeah, I feel you. I'm a fan of the manual, but there is something to be said about the PDKs of the world.
Jeepers.
I got news for you. Like, they're faster. That's the bottom line. It's just, right. You know, you got to kind of balance that whole, you know, driver's experience versus pure inertia and speed.
And speed.
Feel the G's.
Yes. Yeah. It throws your organs into the back of the seat.
Yeah.
How does
Speaking
that
of which, what's your next sports car, Blake?
Ooh, that's a good one. So I had an Audi R8. I totaled it back in October of last year. I didn't total it.
I do want to specify it was not his fault. It wasn't my fault.
Yeah. I was literally pulling into my neighborhood, too.
Really?
It was... You know, I knew you had the Audi traffic.
Who wouldn't hear that? But I didn't know that happened.
Yeah, it's a bummer. But looking at the positives of it, because I like to look at positives in almost all situations, is one, I drove the car for free for a year because I made money on it when it got totaled because of the car market at the time. So that was nice.
There you go.
But it's unfortunate. I still have the emblem, like, in my office that I kept when I was, like, after the accident. I was like, oh, I got to grab that, put it on my shelf. Because, you know, I would probably buy another R8, but I know that they're very close to launching a new generation of it, because they do that every 4 to 5 years.
Go electric, aren't
and
they?
So I think I heard that they were going to get rid of the R8, and then that's why I bought mine originally, because I thought that was going to be the last year that they made the final generation of the R8 before it went electric. And I was like, that'd be kind of a cool collector's item 10, 20 years down the road. The next sports car, I really don't know, because I really don't know when my next one's going to be. Because
so
the car market's nuts right now.
It's ridiculous. So here's a little bit of a – I could be a more simple question. Would you go electric with the sports car, or would you go, you know, more gas-powered?
I think if when I'm ready and, like, I can test drive, like, the Tesla supercar,
when
if that one's out, when
out.
It's out,
yeah.
I think that would be the car I would get, because I'm I'm so bullish and long-term on what Elon Musk is as an individual. He's just an awesome person, pioneer. And I think that car is going to, like, blow some minds when it finally hits the streets from what it's heard.
Electric cars. Have you driven some fast electric
cars?
I've
ridden in a nice Porsche electric, and it's like...
So I rented a Taycan, and it wasn't even the Turbo or Turbo S. It was just the Taycan
model.
And I've also driven before they came out with the Plaid, whatever the fastest, the ludicrous mode Tesla.
Oh, yeah.
Too. And both of those off the line, dude. Man, those are neck snappers. But yeah. Anyway, no, I'll respect your opinion on that. Wait and see what's
out. It's going to wait and see. You know, I like exotic cars 100%, to be frank, for the attention of it. Like, I like cars and I like the attention that it gives you.
Well, it's kind of like one of those things. It's like you want to talk about it. You know, you pull up to the coffee shop and you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's a conversation topic.
Yeah, exactly. Know? And I will say, and I'm very firm on this, first impressions fucking matter with people. They really do.
Yep.
And I'd much rather show up in a suit and a nice sports car than a beat up pickup truck with my hair undone and
hey now. You're hitting close to home.
Hey, but that's my clientele base of what I do business in. Yes. If you show up in a ripped tank top and your muscles are like inflated,
that's very
looking
inflated.
Like
pumped them up in the
Macho
car.
Man
in a,
Randy
in
Savage
a burly truck.
Yeah. In a burly truck, like an old 95, like
is 95
not a 95, I meant a 59, like Ford F-350 off the ranch. I'd want to train
with you.
Did
they make an F-350 at that time?
I don't know. My car years.
I guess I need to find an old manly truck.
Oh, you do.
That's what it's come down to.
My grandpa had a F-150 white, just one he had from his farm and when he passed away and whatnot. Anyway, every time I go down to Southern Utah to their house, I drive it, but it's getting older and older. No one's taking care of it. But I might have to start taking care of it. Anyway, just driving that.
That
thing.
Might need to be passed down to you is what might need to happen.
Yeah.
It's time to talk to some people.
No one's going to want it.
I'm going to take it. Some
happen. There you go.
Anyway, but driving to the farm and that thing.
Yeah.
It feels different.
So if somebody's struggling or stuck, Blake, what words of wisdom would you give them?
Well, that's a loaded question. I love your questions today, Eric, because they can go in so many different directions.
And it's up to you to choose.
That's the point.
Oh, that's a good point. I like that. If someone's struggling and they're caught up, I think first and foremost, you know, the simplicity of identifying what are you struggling with? You know, is it staying consistent in the gym? Is it family life? Is it your work and your job sucks? Mm-hmm. With your work and your job, if that just absolutely sucks, well, we have the internet and smartphones nowadays. So go flip furniture, you know.
Yeah.
There's so many ways to make money and make a career based around some of your passions. Yeah, I think you need to evaluate, okay, what are the lifestyles you want to live?
Right, for sure.
And, you know, that and ties in sacrifice, you know, and I don't think that that's something we talked much about, but in anything you do, there comes a time where you're going to have to sacrifice something for something else.
Absolutely.
You know, like I said, I'm obsessed with golf right now, but there was a solid 3 years that I maybe played one or two rounds of golf because it takes time and there's a level of sacrifice and now I'm starting to feel it. My obsession the last 2 weeks, I made time for golf. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And then like this week I'm like, really got a lot of work I got to get to, but that's more important to me right now. Taking care of my clients that, you know, I'm managing expectations I set on the front end and I'm going to follow through with it.
Yeah.
So if you're struggling, I think you've got to evaluate where you're struggling first. If it's in the fitness world, to kind of stay specific to this podcast, it's like sometimes maybe finding a gym buddy. I know that's helped me sometimes. I'll text up a buddy like, hey dude, like I haven't lifted in like 4 or 5 days, like let's just go and get a good workout, and usually feeding off one another's energy will re-kickstart the engine for me. And then if you're completely unrelated to fitness and you're hearing this for the first time, it's like, you know, start somewhere. You know you've got to, whether it's exercising outside or, you know, I think finding a trainer is a really important first step.
There you go,
an accountability partner.
Same.
Yep.
Agreed.
That's the thing I've loved about training with Eric over the years is, I mean, shoot, it's been 7-8 years now.
Yeah.
And we've evolved through this time where I was training for shows, and now it's just, you know, he's my accountability partner every Friday. And
that's right.
I can say that out of 7 or 8 years, I think Eric's only like canceled on me once, and I've canceled on him a handful of times because of XYZ, but it's the accountability that you preach at the Mecca is just really, really life-changing, I would say, for anybody that's interested in getting into fitness, and whether they're training for a show or just trying to like improve their longevity of life. You know, I mean, that's becoming a really important topic in, you know, taking care of ourselves and things like that. So
yeah,
I think that's a loaded answer, but
yeah,
it went is. In a good direction.
Good answer. It's a bit of data driven, you know, kind of personality answer to be
like, yeah, for sure. But I really like what you said, first, and that's identifying the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of people struggle with that, or they're like, you know, they
shuffle it off on someone else.
Yeah, they, you know, maybe they do shove it off on somebody else, or maybe they, you know, they're making excuses around the problem. They know what the real problem is, but they don't want that to be the problem. You know, for example, like we are going through kind of an interesting time, like you said, the stock market, and, you know, with employees right now at businesses,
right.
All these businesses are just anybody you talk to, you know, and we're not immune from that at all. But, you know, I've talked to a lot of fellow business owners recently, and, you know, every one of them is like, oh my gosh, staffing is just crazy. We're, you know, either having to give raises, or we're can't find people, period. Or, you know, there's some sort of issue relating to staffing. And I was talking to a gentleman this morning, actually, that he's down to like 11 or 12 employees, and he usually has 18. And so his business is really, you know, struggling, and he's, you know, basically was just, you know, kind of confiding in me some of these issues that are happening. And, you know, from an outsider's perspective, you know, it's very easy for me to identify where the shortcomings are.
Right.
You know, and I say, okay, well, you know, this is your problem. And he goes, yeah, I know, but. And I'm like, there's no buts. There's no buts, bro.
Thanks, Eric.
Like, you know what I mean? And it's one of those things that it's like, you know, and he's like, well, I don't want to go back to working 80 hours a week, you know, because he's definitely been able to scale back his time, and right. He works a more, you know, normal schedule now compared to when he was starting his company. Mm-hmm. And he's, I don't want to go back to working 80 hours a week. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, you have to hire people. So you're either going to hire people, or you're, you know, you need to be replacing people and hiring people and paying them more. And he's like, well, I don't know if I can do that. And I'm like, how much money did you make last year?
There you go.
You know, come to Jesus meeting with Eric.
Yeah, you right. can, you know,
we'll start selling those.
I guess what? You there, these are changes that you can make. You just right. don't want to make them. Step one, you've got to pay people a little bit more. That's the time we're in, buddy. Like, it's the facts.
Yep.
Step two, you've got to hire more people. And that might be you, you know. Step three, that requires you to work a lot for mm-hmm. a little while until the ship gets righted. So I think when people really step into struggles, it's the problem is so clear. It's just they don't want to hear the answer of what it's going to take to fix that problem, you know.
Because you know how easy it is to eat healthy and exercise? Mm. It really is. Go do some push-ups. Some sit-ups,
right.
And go for a walk. Like, yeah, right. Like, it's really not that hard.
Go run.
Choose fruit or choose healthier options. Yeah. Like it's really simple. You just have to make the decision to
when
do
it. When
it
comes to basic health and fitness, when somebody is unhealthy, well, stop eating unhealthy things and start moving your body more. Start somewhere, right?
Exactly.
Identifying the problem and working through it. So I like your answer. It's a good answer.
It was very analytical.
It's like, again, it brings me back to Tommy Boy. I talked about this movie earlier today.
I talked about this movie multiple times on the podcast.
I love this. Well, it's a sales movie, yes. You know, and it's the best comedy ever. But anyway, he gets in the elevator with Zelensky or whatever, and he's like, oh, man, you went a little heavy on the pine tree perfume there, kid. And he's like, it's an air freshener. He's like, perfect, you've pinpointed it. Next step is fixing the problem. You know? It's like, you got to find the problem. Once you know the problem, you
just got to fix it.
The problem.
Yep.
The hard part is washing it off, right?
Yeah.
Oh, those pine tree car air
fresheners. Or Subway. Oh. Never leave Subway not smelling like a loaf of bread.
Oh, man. A loaf of fertilizer bread.
Yeah, sugar. Can't even call it bread anyway. No.
So here's a fun question for you. Getting into my favorite questions that we ask. If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, who would they be and why?
Like I mentioned earlier, I think Elon Musk. I'd love to have dinner with him.
I agree.
I just think that would be a hoot. Like, even that though he's like super weird and odd and hard to converse with to an extent,
I think I've watched enough Joe Rogan. Mild Asperger's, you know.
Yeah,
what I'm saying?
I've watched enough Joe Rogan that like there's, I think I could figure out how to jive with him a little bit. You know?
I honestly think that he and I would get along. I don't know.
You probably would.
He probably has Asperger's too, a little bit.
I just don't know what you're talking about. Just built different.
So Elon Musk is one, I think. I think that would be really fun and entertaining. I'm not a huge history buff, so it's hard for me to really go back. Mm-hmm. I think present day, as cheesy as it sounds, like taking my kids to dinner. Like, I'm a huge family man, and I think I would use one of those on, like, maybe when I'm gone, being able to come back and go to dinner with them.
Oh, that's an interesting answer.
That's kind
not,
of like,
we have not heard that before.
Reverse psychology.
I've ever heard that ever in my life.
Yeah.
Like, it would be really cool to see. Watch how my family like evolves over the years, you know, down the chain, like great grandkids, yeah, like to see like what you created,
like where your kids are
after
you're gone.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. Fascinating.
So that would be one. I know that's a few people, but that just came to mind. That was kind of interesting. And then I don't have like a famous athlete that actually I would love to go to dinner with Derek Jeter.
Oh,
he's a father of three daughters, family man. Just got on social media for the first time ever, like 2 weeks ago.
Interesting.
And answered one of my questions. So
Get out of here.
Yeah, I asked him who was the toughest pitcher he ever faced on his little question bubble, and he answered it. So it was pretty cool.
What was his name?
Steve Martinez. So.
Okay.
With Boston Red Sox. So anyways,
I know nothing about that.
But that was fascinating.
From baseball, just here's a little thing that kind of is current in my life in regards to Father's Day and all of, you know, answering this question. When I was a kid younger, and I read this in Derek Jeter's book, as him and his dad would have a contract that his job was to go to school and perform like a job, you know, so he's learning the life skills of, okay, he's got to keep a certain GPA. He's got to do chores around the house, and he gets rewarded with playing a sport, you know, like we all do. If we work hard, we can make money and have experiences.
Right.
So at a young age, my dad and I, you know, parents divorced, we always had kind of this broken household, to say the least, but we would not technically sign a contract, but we'd discuss it at the start of the year. Like, what are your expectations for your grades? You know, and we're going to stay true to that. When I was 12 years old, I slipped up and I got, I want to say it was two bad grades. I got a D and a C, and our agreement was that I would keep a 3.0 average, which is B's. You know, it's really not that hard to get decent grades in school.
Right.
They basically give them to you. You know,
just turn stuff in.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Exactly.
Turn your work in.
Turn it in. Answer the teacher. Be nice to him. Things like that. But when I was 12 and I didn't perform on that, my dad had to make one of the hardest decisions of his life as a father role, not just a dad. He, I was a really good baseball player at the time. You know, trajectory, you know, was going to make the all-star team for the summer and made the team. And my dad had to have, he removed me from the team that year because I didn't uphold my end of the bargain. And I reflected on this on Father's Day because I think there's a few things that shaped me, and it's accountability.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, persistence, it's sacrifice. You know, maybe I could have, who knows? I don't even remember what I was doing at 12, but there was probably a handful of assignments I just didn't turn in.
Probably.
So I was being lazy.
I just lost
whatever.
In my binder.
Yeah.
I don't have those binders.
It was in my backpack. I just forgot to turn it in.
Yeah.
So.
Chasing too many young gals.
So what I was doing. Yeah, that for sure. That was definitely
that
not
was
me.
That was the answer.
I think that what that speaks to that's kind of interesting about me is that pivotal moment. I think a lot shifted, and from that time all the way through high school and even into college, I never got a C. Like, I just never, ever
realized there
went
was
back.
Repercussions.
There's repercussions, you know, and I think that was one of the hardest decisions my dad had to make, because then my team went on to win the state championship, went on to San Bernardino, and I was watching all of this.
Sure,
so it wasn't just this one-time painful thing.
Yeah,
all summer long, it's like you're 12 years old and like your buddies are your best friends. And you, so anyways, I think that's the reason why I would choose Derek Jeter, is because I'd love to tell him that story, as well as he was a huge role model in my baseball career, from not only – being what he is now, a father, but he just lived a very honest and kind of private life. Mm-hmm. He liked to sleep around, but he wasn't loud about it. And he never married until he's ready to be married and have kids. And just, you know, he's a big role model for me in my life. So that's my three people. There we go. Myself. I like two it. People and myself.
I like
two
it.
People on yourself. Yeah, that's right.
we're gonna go with another three set of three question books. I know you're a reader.
Oh boy.
Three books, top three.
Psychology of Money.
Yeah, that's a good
The
one.
Psychology of Money. It just came out a couple years ago. The thing I love about that book, and I'll keep it short and sweet, is that we all view finances and the concept of money differently. Mm-hmm. And it's very dependent upon how you were raised in it. Mm-hmm. And it's sure. really fascinating to really kind of deep dive on how you know, reflect on yourself while reading the book. And that's mm-hmm. the thing I liked about it. It's kind of a short read, but one of mine that I recommend to a lot of people that are interested in investing right now. Mm-hmm. I'm like, just get to know like what you want out of money. Mm-hmm. You know, what is money to you? And like, how do you want to use it? And how do you want to deploy it? And how do you want to like experience from it? You know, some people like handbags, some people like trips, some people like to save it. You know, what is your comfort level with it? The next book that really kind of paved my path in my career was Crush It by Gary Vee. He now has a few series after that in Crushing It, but basically as I was first getting started in commercial real estate, it taught me some techniques and ways that I can utilize social media to really enhance my personal brand. And it really pushed me to get out there. And obviously we have that connection where we had the ability in the early days of Instagram to really grow a personal brand on the backing of an algorithm that we were able to manipulate in the like in the way to get more attention,
right?
You know, and it worked for a few years in that regard that, you know, we knew the metrics of, okay, well, we got to post multiple times a day because it's time oriented. So it's not organized. And every time we post, it's going to be on the top of everybody's feed. So if we're posting three or four times a day, it's getting viewed by everybody. So anyways, that's a really good book. Even though it's a little outdated, it has a lot of really good concepts into how to start a personal brand. And the last book is I read a book by a famous investor, Ray Dalio. Do you know Ray Dalio? He, Bridgewater Capital is his investment hedge fund, and he's one of the most successful investors outside of kind of the everyday name Warren Buffett. And he wrote a book called Principles, and it's principles to life, not only financial investing, but how to look at different aspects of your life and build principles around them to, help enhance and make your life better in ways of, you know, just a really interesting. It's a thick book, and it's one of those books that you can pick up and read one of the principles, because I think there's something like, and it's been a while since I've read it, but there's like, I think there's like 100 different principles he has in it. So it's something that you could pick up and read a little bit and then put it down for a month and then pick it back up, because it wasn't like all...
It doesn't apply.
It was like, okay, well, this is kind of interesting. And then he built a really cool... video sequence after that about the main principles he uses to run his life, you know. So that would be my three books. Those are good ones.
Those are good ones.
And you didn't even give me a heads up on that question. I know. Those are good books.
Yeah, it's off the cuff. Yeah. Okay, top two movies. Let's hear that. And that was actually, the books was easier for me, honestly, answering that question, because like I know there's a handful of books that I've read that I was like, that's like very useful or very good or whatever. Right. But movies, oh, there's so many. So many.
Well, with two movies, I think it's easy. You go one funny and one like
serious. That's exactly
serious.
What I did.
That's why I think you did two. You're a smart man.
Yep. So comedy and then more serious.
More serious. I'm just going to go with it. Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, the newer one.
Have you seen that yet?
I fucking love it.
Really?
Have you seen that?
Oh.
You're going to have to quit your job for a day.
Can you get up and leave right now and go to the theater?
We'll finish this.
Yeah, we'll finish. You have to go see that
right now. I couldn't stand up. I literally was sitting there, and my brother and I was like, do I just go live my life now?
Well, or do I just watch it again?
What's funny is, like, there's a few people that
are... You need to see that.
...that are in...
It's made my top two.
So good.
...that are in kind of, like, my circle, I would call it. It's not necessarily people who are, like, my best friends or whatever, but it's just people that I talk to and people that I have a good relationship with and people that I am really close with. And there's legitimately been like at least five people, you are one of them, that texted me out of the blue, you have to go see this movie. You know what,
and who says that
I was
nowadays?
Going to, but you were on vacation. I want to bug you. I was going to text you.
So you have there, to go
we'll
see
put
this movie.
Another check mark. Six. Yeah. Like, so many people that I know, like, texted
you have to
me.
Go see it. And I think it, I mean, my dad was in the military, so it hits a little bit more closer to home than mm-hmm. some. And in that regard, he actually flew in the Air Force. He flew KC-135s, which are cool. The big tankers. But he had that on, like, repeat when we were kids. Oh. So we got to know the first one super well. And we'd, like, copy it all the time as kids. But sure. The new one just, I mean, for people that weren't super engaged in the first one, like the second one, it's an amazing movie.
Okay.
It's a top fair for enough. Sure, like I said, and I can't wait till it comes out. It was
and
perfect.
Very close to a perfect movie.
Does it beat Gladiator, though?
Is that a question? Well, I don't know. Eric, question. You like Gladiator. That's like you. It beats it for me, too, because Gladiator's good. But there's something about Top Gun. I think the thing about Top Gun, it's my favorite thing about it, is that they did a great job pulling it to present day. With the updated fighter jets and the stuff. Like, they made it very realistic.
They did, but it was also a movie with a good story. There wasn't... Like, I saw this headline and was like, right-wing movie or, like, American movie does well at box office or whatever. It's like, that was not what it was. It was just a good movie. There was no other agenda, which I feel like there's always something like that nowadays.
Right.
Or, like, there's obviously something there that they threw into the script because they felt like they had to because it was Hollywood.
Yep.
This was just a good story.
It was
story.
Just made. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was designed. It was really cool. I watched a few of, like, the YouTube backgrounds of, like, how it was made and stuff. And, like, it just made it even more, like, cool to see the final product. Because there's a bunch of stuff that was, like, well, we didn't plan for that to happen. And it happened. Right. And it ended up in the movie.
Right.
Oh.
That's yeah.
Cool. So, you know, it's meant to be.
It's meant to be. Second movie. I'm going to go funny here. The quirky, goofy guy in me just loves Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, dude, that's a classic. It's a classic.
And you just can't beat it.
It's my mom's favorite movie
so,
of all time.
I'm not surprised
I know.
At all
I know.
About that.
It's such that's a hilarious. Good one.
So that, you know, I don't want to make it too complex because now that the I'm thinking about it, there's a handful of movies I could list. But I've got a few buddies that we reference that movie a lot. So
oh, dude.
It's a fun okay. one.
I got robbed by a sweet old lady in a motorized cart. Like, dude, what?
I constantly just say, our
that,
pets' heads are falling off.
Yeah.
That, sir, that I owe you. You better keep on. You better hold on to that one.
You better. 250,000. Might want to hold on to that one.
Yeah.
See, dude, I know word for word this movie.
Yeah, yes. Right.
I got worms.
Yeah, I got worms.
That's what we're going to call
so
it.
You're telling
I got
me you've
worms.
Had those gloves the whole time?
Yeah. We're in the Rockies.
Yeah. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you.
Dude, so good. The best part, well, there's so many best parts, but the one that I continually laugh about is, and probably gets referenced the most around here, as you can imagine why, because we've got a bunch of women in bikinis running around here, is the damn oil boys.
Oh, so, yes.
Like, you happen to know where we could find a couple of, you know, oil people to oil us up for
our next show.
Our next show.
What do you think, there's, Harry? You know, there's a town.
There's a
about
town about a mile back that way. I bet you could find a couple of nice young lads over there running after. Wait.
They drive the off and they're like, wait a second.
That's the best. I love it.
That is it.
So what are a few that came close to making the cut? Quick fire.
Oh, boy. Quick fire. I love the Austin Powers series, too.
Oh,
that
dude,
comedy
yes.
series. That's great, too. That's kind of like our childhood. And I think Eric and I grew up in circles because my cousin and Eric are pretty tight buddies. And so I think that was like our circle. And then I've always loved the James Bond series.
Dude,
and there's
no,
just too
you.
Many to count.
That
I think the most
we
recent
friends,
James
Blake.
Bond
that
was super sick because it was like the enemy slash weapon was COVID. And so it was kind of interesting to me that how it was correlated that way because they like held off the launch for a year because of COVID. And then it comes out and you're like, well, that's basically what COVID was, where they shot this like disease you couldn't see in the air and it kills people, you know?
Yeah, kind of. There were some parallels there. So did you like how they ended Daniel Craig's run.
I did
Bond.
With the daddy in me loved that. Even yeah. though it was a little different. I mean, he wasn't banging as many women, you know.
That's
definitely a good Bond like move, yeah. you know.
I think so. I still have mixed feelings about No Time to Die. I was so pumped to see that movie and they kept delaying it. And I haven't seen a movie still in the theaters since I saw
Bond
Skyfall.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
In the theater. That's been the last movie I saw in theaters is Skyfall.
You really don't like to binge on some buttery popcorn.
Well, the next one's going to be Top Gun Maverick. So
it's that's what I hear.
You better go see it in theaters before it goes out. You know, you got to see it in theaters.
I mean, you got a good home setup, but you got to go to the theater.
Yeah, we have a theater right here. We're sitting at the movie theater. But
where's the popcorn?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still mixed, but I will, even after that movie having kind of mixed reviews in my mind, I will still say that Daniel Craig, I think, is the best Bond.
I'd agree with that. There's something to be said for Pierce Brosnan because that was like the Bond I grew up knowing.
Yeah.
I think his sentimentality is what makes him still in the running.
I know. Yeah. I just think it's funny because like you kind of, your Bond is whoever you grew up watching as Bond.
True.
You know, it's like,
true.
Then when there's this new Bond, you're like, well, that's not the real Bond.
Yeah.
You know, kind of.
So, and he's so much different. They're so much different because when you watch a Pierce Brosnan Bond, you know that, like, he's going to fly through unscathed. He's going to save the day. Everything's going to go his way.
Right.
But with Daniel Craig, it's like,
he's getting beat up and
like,
thrown to the
like
shitter, too.
Keeping us guessing. You don't always
There's
win.
A big swing, though, I feel like, between when he. Casino Royale, and then
for
no
sure,
time to die, just his character
for sure,
in
right?
That spectrum, yeah,
yeah
for
yeah.
sure, yeah, I agree.
Well folks, good. this was great.
We're gonna wrap her up, because
I've had my pre-workout and I'm starting to itch,
yeah, tingle.
Pretty good.
I got two questions left for you that we gotta answer, or else this podcast wouldn't be complete without.
All right,
who would play your character in a biography?
Ooh, whoa. Ooh.
Yeah, whoa is right. That's a big question right there.
Who would play my character? Can I reverse this? Who would I play in someone's biography?
You could do both. Who would you play?
I would play Brett Hughes.
Love
Very
it.
Nice.
Right?
No, that's good.
Right? Yes. That's why I flipped the question.
Absolutely.
Because yep. I want to be just
so
like Brett Hughes.
Who would play you? Dude.
Ryan Reynolds.
I was going to say that.
Okay.
I was going to say
Ryan Reynolds.
Charlie Dunham.
Hunnam.
Ryan Reynolds. Hunnam. I could see Ryan. Yeah.
Dude, Ryan Reynolds for sure. You kind of look alike, kind of.
Yes.
You sound alike. The cadence of your voice.
Yeah.
Right.
Too, and like for people that know you well, like the sarcastic kind of joking side of
you. Yeah, kind of like the.
He could totally capture that.
Yes.
And I think he could
like
be
that.
Serious enough, too.
That's my answer.
That's a good answer.
That's my answer.
That's
I'm not
right
a huge
answer.
Movie buff, so, like, when you ask that question, I can't think of a ton of actors that, like, come
well,
to mind.
Well, like, new
you
movies.
Know?
I've had a hard time getting on board with, like,
just new actors.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Been coming out. There's,
I like
been
that.
Much.
I like Ryan Reynolds. Yep.
Okay, last one, and then we'll let you crush it. Top two role models and influences in your life.
Ooh. Top two. Well, I mentioned the last one. My old broker, Brett Hughes. I don't think he does know that he's a role model for many. I think directly he has just a lot of really good traits as a good human being.
Oh, dude. I 100% subscribe.
I could
to that.
Definitely ride that coattail of like he is a great mentor. He's a very positive person. He has a great family, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know I mentioned that a few times, but family is important to me. And it's weird because you start to realize as your family grows, like, mm-hmm. how much more important it becomes.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you don't have a family, like, yeah, oh, my mom and dad and brother and sister, oh, yeah, I love my family. But, like, when you have your own family, it's just, like...
Oh, it's so different.
It's weird. It's really weird. And, like, the responsibility. And
that.
Then it's, like... The love and the ties, and you're like, oh my gosh.
Well, and it's like immediate too.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing how like all of a sudden there are these things that like you care the most about.
Yeah.
When before they existed to you, they didn't.
I loved your Father's Day post, by the way, because you like hit the nail on the head with how you discussed about how you didn't know how much you could care about your kids in your family life, you know, like we're talking about. Like, it's just weird how all of a sudden it's like, whoa. Yeah.
It's like, I didn't even know that I wanted kids.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I really didn't.
And now you're like, you couldn't picture life without them.
Oh, dude, no. Yeah. Absolutely not. They're like my favorite thing in the world.
Well, my girl is 2.5 weeks, and I can't think of life before that. Like, the feeling of it's weird.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
You didn't leave one up there.
Yeah, it is odd.
The other individual is a role model. That's a tough one because I think there's a few individuals within, but from like an outreach standpoint, I know I mentioned Derek Jeter earlier as like a role model from a standpoint of athletics, but I think career wise, I've never idolized someone specifically in the commercial real estate world because they all do it differently than how I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to put Gary Vee a little bit on a pedestal, he's opened up and allowed me to take the risk of what I'm trying to do with incorporating digital media and marketing and social media in this outdated commercial real estate world of taking two things that aren't aligned and trying to bring them together. Because, you know, residential real estate has had this adoption of social media and personal branding, and it's made some wildly successful influencers in the space.
Right.
Yeah. But commercial real estate really hasn't had that. And yeah, there's a lot of legality and conflict of interest you got to be a little careful with.
Mm-hmm.
But he's kind of opened that door to say, look, here, you can kind of do it. Mm-hmm. I know he actually, a few years ago, I know his sister really well that's a real estate agent. And so I kind of converse with her quite a bit on like how she's doing things and kind of watch what she's doing. But he got really close to buying a huge brand. And I don't know if it was Remax or something else, but like he was looking at buying a huge global brokerage because of real estate being such a relationship, community driven type thing. And that's where social media comes into play as a huge benefit, is you become this local chapter, this local news and this local influence to you know, your community and customer base. So I would say he's definitely a role model or individual that I look up to from what he's done, you know.
Fair enough.
There you go.
I like it. Well, dude, it's been a pleasure
to have you. Long overdue
to have you at the table.
That was just waiting for the table.
How do you like tables? So Blake's one of the few people that has a table made by the same man who made this table.
And he's now kind of retired.
And he's kind of retired. So they are, they could be like NFTs, bruh.
Yeah,
except for it's not a, it's not digital. But we could make a picture of it.
That's true.
Make a picture of it.
But what's the utility?
We could figure that out.
Okay, we'll figure it out. Maybe it's like a yearly membership to the Mecca if they bought the NFT of the table. That's another, we need to talk about NFTs because I think that
that's next.
It would be kind of cool to, it's a value thing, you know.
Totally.
In a, you know, I see it.
We talked about this a few weeks ago. We got to do it.
Yeah, we got to talk about it a little bit more.
We're going
to
pioneer NFTs.
It's not, it's really not that hard to make them. You just have to understand, it's one of those things that you literally have to pre-program it forever on the front end. You can't go in and change it down the road. So you've got to put a lot of thought and time and energy into what you want it to be when it's at its best, to then program it at the start to do that along the way.
You know, I also, side fact before we get on, where do I become Picasso and just scribble on paper and get millions of dollars for it?
Well, you got to die first.
Oh, that's true.
Dang it. That's one of the
That's what I'm
one
for.
Of the things.
It is interesting how death solidifies. Anyway, art, that is something else.
Okay. Well, we could go on for there.
Rabbit holes. Blake, you're an amazing man.
Everybody, is arm day.
Check Blake Haggett out. Social media, KZB Real Estate.
Sweet.
I Googled you right before you came in.
Was it good? Was it good?
Well, it literally suggested Blake Haggett Boise before I even finished.
Were there naked
photos?
So there
you go. And for two,
I don't have any of those out there yet. Yeah, I'm working on my sex tape, though, so we'll see.
Oh, that's the next thing we didn't talk about. OnlyFans.
He comes up immediately. So.
Right. Hopefully it's in a posing suit.
Yeah,
I think, I wonder, we should do that. We need to start, you know, pulling Google up on the people that we have on as guests and seeing what pops up.
Yeah.
What's on Google Images?
African-American decathlete woman pulls up for me.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. So
phenomenal.
That's impressive. I always knew I was a little bit.
All right, folks. Alrighty. Well, it's been great to be back in the saddle on the podcast with an awesome guy. Check him out, and we'll see you at the gym.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for joining us on the Power of Lifting podcast. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe, and share. For more content like this, follow Eric Cafferty and the Mecca Gym on all social media platforms.